What you're about to hear is an incoherent mess.
Hello and welcome to yet another episode of The Masked Podcasters. Who are these frankly disappointing people coming at you through the magic of podcasting? My name is Shannon and as usual, joined here by my brother Jack.
We're disappointed or disappointing?
I think both, Jack. I think we can swing wide away. And anyone who's listened to this podcast knows that we are both regularly disappointed and very, very disappointed.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah, I think that'll works. Work. I think that could be the intro every single time we do this show. We're going to talk a particular movie, but I kind of want to talk about the lure of nostalgia.
Yeah,
I want to talk about fan service.
Yep.
I want to talk about shitty movies purporting to be other movies that effectively just say, you remember that stuff you liked? This is something similar. You see it? Can you see what we're doing here? That's what I want to talk about. You've read what this is. Like, you've clicked on the link and downloaded this episode, so I don't have to reveal it like it's a new thing that you're not going to know.
It's a big mystery.
What I might do to Jake is just say, put random movies on, and then when people click onto it, they'll download it, and then we'll talk about a different movie. And then
Every time. It's the mystery podcast.
Every time it's going to say, dude, where's my car, is the episode that we're doing. We're going to have 900 episodes simply just titled that.
Yep.
People will download it, then be disappointed, and therefore the prophecy works. You see where I'm going with that?
Yeah.
We're talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife. And this is a movie I desperately wanted to like. I have a particular nostalgia for Ghostbusters 1 and 2. And I know people don't share that nostalgia necessarily with 2. I think people decided that 2 was kind of too similar to 1.
Basically a carbon copy.
Yeah,
generally,
but I like it. It's different reasons for different reasons. But I remember 2 over 1 more, and we have weird things like that in our childhood.
Yeah, where it goes back to like Beverly Hills Cop 3.
Yeah, there's things like 3. We just might have had access to them more.
Yeah,
than
maybe
others.
Like the video store didn't have these ones or something.
Or we had something on VHS, but not the first one. Or something weird, and it probably no more relevant than the Blues Brothers 2000.
Of course, yes.
Widely considered one of the worst movies of all time.
Yep.
But we will fight anyone.
I will defend that to the death.
I've got into bar fights. I've got scars defending that movie. Because I think it's a flawless movie with absolutely nothing I would change.
Okay.
And frankly, Blues Brothers, the first one, is the flawed piece
of course.
The two.
Yes.
Now that's patently ridiculous, but we do have a soft spot for Blues Brothers 2000.
Of course.
So I have a bit of a reverence for 2. This movie pretends that 2 didn't exist, doesn't happen, which is a bit strange.
It is strange. I mean, it doesn't take the all female Ghostbusters into account either. So they're completely wiped from existence. But only number 1 is referenced in this movie, which is odd.
It is strange. Now, I'm a cynical bastard, so I can look, and we can describe the plot to you if you want. Seriously, like, it's a Ghostbusters plot. It is what it is. We'll go through it, but okay, fine. I hear you. We'll go through the plot. Whatever.
Tell us the plot, Shannon.
That you can hear them yelling in their cars. It is a poor family, single mother, 2 kids, having to relocate to their dead grandfather's house, who we see die in the kind of teaser part at the start. Yep. It's clearly one of the Ghostbusters' houses. The nerdy young daughter is nerdy, and Finn Wolfhard is Finn Wolfhard. Like, that's
being rebellious, but a little bit older.
Yeah, and he's like 15, pretending he's 19 or whatever.
Yeah, whatever, yeah.
And the mum and Paul Rudd have a meet cute. because they're at summer school, and then they start a Ghostbusting because they find that in that town is like a portal to Zul, to awaken Zul. Zul's, you know, burial site or whatever, and Zul from the first Ghostbusters movie. The kids discover all of the Ghostbustery material, the proton packs
and traps
and the Ecto-1 and all the things that, again, like, I remember that from the first film. Those are the things that I remember and value in a Ghostbusters franchise. What else do I value from a Ghostbusters franchise? Oh, I know, Marshmallow Men. and what if there wasn't one that was huge? What if there were many that were small? Sorry, I just wrote half the movie. And then ghost stuff ensues. Kids get in trouble. No one believes them to start with, even though fucking ghosts in this universe are real and are a thing that people remember.
No one's seen a ghost for 30 years, Sean.
And can look it up on, you know, YouTube because it exists. In fact, is the first movie a documentary or is that just canon? We don't know. It doesn't matter. Then ghosts and everyone's like, oh, the kids were right. Clearly they're ghosts. Kids defeat ghosts with the help of some adults. The end, right? That's the movie. Yep. Is that, have I missed any important key parts of that?
You're describing Stranger Things, Shen. That's the wrong...
With less fun. So here's what happened, right? Yep. This is the meeting. This is the marketing meeting. This is like, okay, we want to reboot Ghostbusters. We've done women. Didn't go real well. What's left? And someone was like, what about if we do it with horses? And then they said, you're an idiot. No one's going to watch Ghostbusters with horses.
Get out.
And then like, what if we use cute children? And then they went, brilliant. And then that man got $100 million. to make this movie. That's how that happened, right?
Yeah, basically the pitch meeting was that, yep. Well, no, I reckon they did the old James Cameron thing, right? They put up a picture of Ghostbusters, the Ghostbusters logo, next to a poster of Stranger Things, and then wrote dollar signs. That was it.
Also throw in the first half of It. Except the difference, particularly with It and Stranger Things, is that they are good. And
I think you're being hard. I think so. McKenna Grace is Phoebe. She plays the granddaughter of, or great granddaughter of
Spengler.
Of Spengler.
Egon Spengler, who has actually passed. Harold Ramis, who played
Harold Ramis, passed away. And she looks and acts exactly like him.
No, she looks and acts like she's trying to be him.
Well, she is being him. She,
in a very annoying manner.
A very annoying manner.
I don't like her at all.
I thought she was probably the best part of the movie.
It felt over. It felt like someone like had seen the first Ghostbusters and was like, I've got to be that guy.
Okay.
And that annoyed me.
Okay.
Finn Wolfhard, if you're listening, buddy, you got to do something different.
Yeah, you can't be the same character every single time.
He's not turning into a great looking dude.
No, that's the problem with when you have kid actors who rise to stardom.
Like, you can replay this clip, but he will be like a Hemsworth, I reckon, at 25.
No,
like, he'll have this great chiseled jaw, but he's in the awkward phase of growing out of.
No, he'll be like this, the guy from The Sixth Sense.
I think he's growing out of, he's in that awkward phase of being not a cute kid,
also not very good.
No, he's a bit wooden.
He's not very, like, the character he's doing hasn't got a lot to do, really. He's like a semi-protective older brother and flirts with the local sheriff's daughter.
Who just kind of accepts that he's there. Like, he's immediately kind of...
Welcome into
the
family.
He's my hunky dream guy. You're 15 and you're an awkward looking man. Yeah. I think you'll either be Adam Driver, which, you know, brilliant actor and kind of a bit strange looking, but seems to have massive sex appeal. Just ask John Oliver. Or you'll end up being Haley Joel Osment and you'll pick up character parts.
Yeah.
But somewhere in the middle, I really didn't like this movie and I really wanted to. And I got so annoyed with the fan service through the movie in parts. There were good parts. The parts that I liked is the music is pitch perfect. Like every time something happened, it just reminded me of Ghostbusters. Like it wasn't.
It's just the little subtle tones. Yeah.
But there's it harks back to a better time. The 80s is when you can you can do these movies. Like this, you know, the Goonies and it drips 80s. And this is trying desperately to be 80s in the way that the Stranger Things was 80s, yeah. except they actually tried with the Stranger Things. Like, it's all the product placement stuff and all of the things and the costumes. This is modern time trying to tell an 80s story.
Yeah.
And it doesn't quite work in any meaningful way. And I know that people like cute shit. Like, I still think that's why The Mandalorian has so much love, is because the baby Yoda kid Grogu character is objectively cute. Like, yes, it's super cute.
Yeah.
But is that what people took out of The Mandalorian? Like,
yeah, that he's super cute? But the actual story is good.
But I think it boals down to Grogu cute. I think
some people were there, Grogu cute.
And I reckon that's what's going to... Seriously, this movie left my brain, which is why my general storyline was all over the shop.
Oh, the basic plot was right.
But yeah, very basic plot. But all the details in the movie left my brain the moment I switched the TV off, except for maybe those cute little marshmallows, because look how cute they are. Hey, what are you doing, marshmallow? But that is such a cynical scene. It makes no sense.
No, it makes literally zero sense why they're there.
Nor does the massive big Stay Posh Marshmallow Man like mural in the town on the side of the convenience store. It is all about fan service, and just it's like they did it by focus group. What's the bits you remember at Ghostbusters? Oh, well, there was the big Marshmallow Man, and some fucking executive wrote it down in a suit and went, all right, we just got to give them. How do we give them more marshmallow? Oh, instead of one, we'll just give them hundreds and they'll be doing cute stuff. And I can sell 19 different pop vinyl figures of them with different shit. Like, isn't that just a cynical cash grab? Focus on making the story good and unique and different, and then give us cute nostalgia stuff, and I'm right there. But if your movie is solely nostalgia crap, then I'm done.
I think there are some good things about the movie. I don't think it's all bad. What I want to do, I want to go through each character. I just want to tell you give me a yes or no if they're necessary or were they good.
Okay. Can we start with the character, the ironic character,
the podcast dude,
the kid who's literally called Podcast.
Yeah, he's got no other name than Podcast. Yeah, because he has a podcast. No, he gave himself a nickname called Podcast.
It's also not a nickname. If I play football and someone's like, hey, football, that doesn't make sense. That's stupid.
No, it doesn't work.
They call you Boots or Mike or something. He could be Mike because he's got a microphone. I don't know.
He is probably one of the most annoying characters probably ever.
For no reason.
He doesn't need to be there. Why is that guy there? Other than to have a cute moment at the end, you know, with...
To bring the marshmallows back, man.
With Stance? Ray? Yeah, with Ray.
Yeah.
That's the only good reason why he's there. There's no need for him to be there. Other than Phoebe had to have a weird sidekick / love interest.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell was going on there.
We doubled down on the love interests too much. There's too much love.
There's three pairing off of couples here.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
I love Paul Rudd. But again...
He just needs to stop doing it.
What's he doing? What's this? Nothing. This is Paul Rudd just being Paul Rudd. This is him phoning it in.
He's just like, do I need $2 million? $2-3 million?
I think he's just there.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, there's Paul Rudd. It's like, it's so cynical. It's literally like, let's get one of the most popular franchises of all time. We'll stick one of the most likable dudes in there.
Yeah, like the most likable dude, yeah.
Yeah, it should have been him and fucking Jason Bateman and The Rock. And I would have watched the shit out of Ghostbusters.
The trifecta.
I joke, but couldn't we have just recast the Ghostbusters with fucking good Ghostbusters?
Well, you could. I don't mind the kid, you know, the great-granddaughter angle. I think it's fine. I think what the problem is the ghost busting is the worst part of the movie.
It doesn't make any logical sense. We get so much time with no ghosts.
Yeah.
You know, that opening, the opening scene of Ghostbusters in the library gets you ghosts, right?
Mm.
Instead, we get a dead Egon Spengler.
Well, that's a ghost that's chasing him.
Yeah, I know that, but it's just a bunch of like, lights and shit.
I didn't mind the opening scene. I thought the opening scene was done perfectly well. It was dark. It was creepy. The music was there. It kind of set the tone. And then they went away from that tone completely.
I didn't like it. And I actually think the first scene in the female Ghostbusters is better.
I haven't seen the female Ghostbusters, so I can't comment.
I think that opening scene with Gabe from The Office is way better. Way better. And it makes sense because it's like a haunted house attraction that he's running that actually has a real ghost in it that scares the shit out of everyone.
I disagree. I think the opening scene is good. I enjoy the opening scene. I'm like, oh, here we go. This is what's going to be like.
It's all downhill from there, right? What I do think is good is the CGI or whoever they got to stand in for Harold Ramis. Clearly CGI at the end.
Oh, yeah. It was Jason Reitman was one of the people who stood in for him.
But they in shadow and stuff, I was like, holy shit. No, he's dead. There's no way that's Harold Ramis.
It's really,
I was
genuinely really good.
It was convincing.
And I really liked they didn't make him talk. They didn't have that weird mouth, teeth thing that happened with Carrie Fisher and David Cushing.
But you just from Star Wars because they just crammed as many people as they can.
Yeah.
But it worked enough, particularly in silhouette and sort of standing.
Silhouette was really good. Like
that worked for me. I was on board with that. But him becoming an old crank who moves I don't buy any of that story. It just annoyed me, you know. Then you've got Annie Potts as kind of like the person who was like the original secretary. Annie Potts was looking at the. She was like, what, a real estate person? Or she was like kind of just.
Well, she was looking after his finances. She said she was trying to keep the bills paid.
Yeah, some bullshit. She was just thereabouts.
She was just like, there because.
We've got to fit her in somewhere.
Yeah, somewhere.
And
we've
got to fucking Avengers it at the back end. Don't even get me started on the Avengers part of the fucking last.
I liked, again, the worst part of it is when they start chasing ghosts. When they find that hidden tomb and and what the fuck was with J.K. Simmons? What is going on with J.K. Simmons?
All I can think out is that is probably the best fake out ever. Like, that seems to be a good character actor who looks like he's going to have a big part. Not at all.
Dead. Like I reckon he was on set for one day.
He was there for half an hour. He just was like, I'm just popping to say hello. Sure, I'll jump in this. It's fine.
Yeah, sure. No worries. I'll get on costume. No worries.
Because I was all excited. I was like, holy shit, that's J.K. Simmons.
Yeah.
And then I was crushed because it was like, this movie sucks.
And then fucking Emily, what's her name? The chick Mun. Is it Mun?
No, that's the one with John Mulaney. You're thinking of the other one. Wild.
Olivia Wilde. Justin Timberlake.
No, that's Jessica
Biel. They're all the fucking same, man.
That's Jessica Biel. Sorry, okay. If I know one thing, it's my Hollywood
Hollywood couples.
Power couples.
That was seriously, the whole big dogs coming back. Just do something different. Why wouldn't you go back to the same story?
Yeah.
Like the criticism of number two is that it's too much like number one. So for the reboot, you go back to the well of doing the exact same thing. I understand nostalgia and I understand... You know, this is what his big plan was, but have a different apocalypse.
But
fucking beast.
I reckon they listened too much to the criticisms of the female Ghostbusters, right? Which was, it departed too much from the kind of formula. So this tried to do the different but the same.
Yeah.
And I just don't think it worked. I don't think the kids were believable moving from, like, those guys that they got in were scientists and had studied science their whole life. And these are dropkick fucking kids and a science teacher who immediately gets possessed. Like, why are these kids able to run fucking... We understand how dangerous these proton packs are. Like, they set the whole first movie up as these are bad. You never cross the streams. That could, like, you see them struggle, particularly in that ballroom scene in the first one. And I know Ghostbusters backwards. Like, I love that movie. That ballroom scene is an extended, tense, well-plotted scene where you get Bill Murray being hilariously Bill Murray. You know, you get all that stuff happening, the over-earnest of kind of Ray, and then you've got Egon's just completely nerdy and you know, awkward, and Bill Murray's just cracking wise. That perfect mix. If you're going like for like, you need a wisecracking kid. So who do they stick in? We get Podcast as our wisecracking.
He's not funny.
He's not funny. So it's missing comedy. Like, this Ghostbusters is a comedy. Yeah. This is missing.
Well, your Paul Rudd was meant to be your comic relief, I think, and it just he didn't have any jokes. He wasn't funny.
He didn't get enough screen time.
No.
And then he gets possessed and gone. Now, if you compare the kind of hilarity that you get with Rick Moranis in the first one, like he is hilarious in that movie. In that awkward party scene that he has with his, you know, accountant, with all the people he's from his accounting firm, and he can write the whole movie, the whole party off as a tax deduction. That hums before he becomes possessed. Everything with Paul Rudd is boring. Everything with Paul Rudd, the lead up is crap.
It's a scientist who looks at seismic activity. It's just what I think is missing is that, you know, she goes from not believing in ghosts to seeing her grandfather and is not freaked out by her grandfather's ghost at all. Like, if you don't believe in ghosts and then all of a sudden you're playing a chess match with a ghost and being led down a dark corridor with a ghost, not even remotely being scared, is weird, number one.
Yeah. But
then going from not knowing about ghosts, not knowing anything about your great-grandfather to fixing a proton pack and, you know, shooting that off, it's just not believable.
Yeah, and the Finn Wolfhard, well, he can fix cars. And, like, none of it's believable. Like, nothing makes sense. And how do you fix it?
I think you fix it by you have, you know, Phoebe. I'm okay with the great-grandfather, great-grandparent. I'm fine with that.
Grandfather, not great-grandfather. It's grandfather, isn't it?
Phoebe's mum was his grandfather.
It's his daughter.
Oh, okay. So his grandfather.
Yeah, grandfather.
Sorry,
yeah.
My apologies. So I'm fine with that connection. I think what you need to do is she needs to be secretly studying ghosts and learning all she can from his memoir or his diary or his old journals or something. And she's studying to do that. And then all of a sudden she decides to take her friends who are similar to the three that you've mentioned before, are all scientists and all do it, and start that way.
They're still children, right?
Yeah, I get that.
It just doesn't resonate with me that children.
But couldn't you make it so that she's such a genius that she's made the proton packs better and more efficient, or something along those lines? Technology.
Isn't she like 12 or 13?
You make her a bit older. I think you make her a teenager, but make her a bit older.
I think the female version got the story writer.
And that's tell me the basic story of the girl version.
They are the Melissa McCarthy character and who is it? The other
it
one?
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Who's the other one that's always in those bloody movies? What's her name?
McKenna? Kate McKenna?
No, she's in it as well, but the other one, you know.
I don't know. I don't care.
It's whoever, the two of them have been studying this stuff for years. One of them goes on to try and have a proper career because ghosts are seen as a joke. The thing that pisses me off about that one is it's like people have forgotten the first movie. It's like we've moved on from that now, and now ghost is seen as a kind of joke. It's junk science. And it's like, no, it's not, because it was literally documented.
There's like a giant fucking marshmallow man.
So
footage of that.
They've continued studying, and Melissa McCarthy has continued studying it and kind of is seen as a bit of a joke. And the other one, whose name will come to me, is in everything. She's the main chick in Bridesmaids, and she's always in everything Melissa McCarthy does. And as soon as you say the name, because I know you're looking it up, it'll be annoying.
I'm looking it up right now when I finally find the female version.
And I keep saying, Leslie, it's not Leslie Mann, it's the other one. And as soon as you say it, I'm going to be annoyed. And I'm going to wait now. I'm not even going to continue until you tell me
what it is. Oh, here it is. This is the one I was looking for. Where is the information?
We're just going to wait, people.
We're just going to wait. We're going to sit quietly.
Jake sorts this out.
Kristen Wiig?
It's Kristen Wiig. Of course it is.
Okay.
Now I'm annoyed. Right. So Kristen Wiig, and she's trying to have a proper career, right? And so she finds out that Melissa McCarthy has published a book, published their book that they wrote together, and the professor, I think it's actually Charles Dance,
Harold Fillmore,
sees this book and basically throws her out. So she's got she goes to beg for the book to be taken down, and then they get called to a real life ghost sighting, and they kind of get back into it, and then they reform the Ghostbusters because they see it's an opportunity. She can't work anymore because she's basically now mud, and Melissa McCarthy was always kind of mud, so they're both sort of joined back up together as friends that split. They draft in some people. You basically get another African-American character who just kind of joins for no reason because they need help.
Leslie Jones, again, yeah.
It's a bit of annoying. And Kate McKinnon, who's the kind of Spengler character. And then they reunite and form to tackle as a... And unfortunately, I think most of their jokes are kind of like, we're female. And that didn't really fly. And I don't think it got... I actually don't think it got... It got very unfairly targeted because they were female. And my issue was never because they were female. I think my issue was because it wasn't funny. But I think the story beats were better.
Well, I mean, Rotten Tomatoes gave it a 74%.
I just – and it had Chris Hemsworth as this massive big bimbo character who was so dumb he could barely get up in the morning. And so I thought he was way too dumb for the position. But he at least gave it his all. And then it just devolved into silliness with a whole bunch of dancing routines and shit that just didn't make a lot of sense. But I actually thought putting it back in the city, which is another thing that Ghostbusters kind of needs to my mind, is like watching the Ghostbusters be broke, completely dead-ass broke, and sell the business and basically say, we haven't seen Ghosts for 30 years, we can't keep this venture going, and have those guys in the early stages of the movie sell it to a young entrepreneur or something that wants to do this and still believes in it. And that might be a relative, you know, or whatever, could find out later on that it's a relative and that's why they bought it or whatever. It could still be the granddaughter if that's the way we want to go. And you have a mixture. But I think you've got to get likable people that you know, end up coming back in when all hell breaks loose in New York again. And I think... You know, it has to be a city environment because I just don't think the small town works real well. I didn't like the setting. To me, it was cynical to try and make it like Stranger Things or, you know, like that small town thing just didn't work.
It's exactly what they're going for.
It didn't work because the first one was predicated on the back. It was this particularly big building that had to draw the power. Like it was all about New York. New York was a character and you've basically killed one of the most recognizable characters in that Ghostbusters. Like if you're gonna do it, if you're gonna play into nostalgia, play in hard. Don't just give us beats. You know, make it funny and make it sequential in the position. I think that's what they tried to do with Answer the Call, and it didn't land very well, but I just don't think it was very funny. And I just think you've got to make it funnier. And Jason Reitman has a particular type of funny. I think, like, Up in the Air and the things that he's done, I really like.
Yeah.
But it's a different type of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't really suit the tone of Ghostbusters, I don't think.
And see, Paul Feig, who directed Answer the Call, is really funny. It's really good. He's a perfect director for that. I just think that they lent too hard into the Kristen Wiig, Melissa McCarthy comedy, which doesn't work for everyone.
Yeah.
And it got really silly towards the end, and it just annoyed me, right? But I think that movie's better, and that's so weird.
Yeah, well, I mean, I haven't seen it. I didn't hate this movie. I think there's a lot of things wrong with it, and a lot of the things you kind of roll your eyes at and be like, you know, yes, I do remember that from the Ghostbusters. Thank you. I like this. I like the more subtle hints, like him pulling a crunch bar out of his pocket and the collection of spores and stuff and moles in the background. And little background details are fine, but it's when they knock you over the head with it is when it gets really...
But I think the kids have either got to be cute or they've got to be funny and not annoying.
But you're also right. The grand scheme of things, like, you know, you go back to the first movie, it's overpowered. They're, you know, in physical danger. You know, one proton pack isn't enough to take down these ghosts. They need all three or two of them. And you're giving it to this young female character who's, like, you know, a blade of grass. She's tiny, she's thin, she's, you know, she get knocked over with a proton pack. There's no way she can hold that by herself.
And the fun of the first Ghostbusters is watching them learn how to do it. Like, it's all theoretical to a point. And then they get called in and they have to learn, and that whole ballroom scene and the lead up is all just them kind of their first experience of having to actually do what they're going to do. Instead,
she can't be instantly good at it. The problem is that she's instantly good at ghostbusting.
We get this car chase where they just destroy the fucking town.
Yeah.
You know, like, they don't have the savvy to be able to talk, you know, talk their way out of it like the Ghostbusters do. They talk their way out of it, that scene, and they're like, we can release it back if you want it. Like, it's all that stuff is really critical to setting it up.
Mm.
And I just don't think that it's not earned. Like, you watch the Ghostbusters, the original Ghostbusters, they earn that. They go through that journey so that you feel that these kids are just like, within a couple of beats, you get a whole hour of nothing. Then they start they're like, oh, we're ghostbusting and we're driving around and we're destroying shit. And then they get locked in prison and then the mum doesn't believe them. It's just all bullshit. Like,
they almost needed like a small ghost to fight. Like, instead of the end of the world apocalypse, like, learn how to ghostbust first, have a small ghost to look after and challenge. And then in the next movie, because they're clearly setting up a franchise and set the next movie, then do your big apocalyptic event. Like,
what do you think about the Avengers moment at the end?
Oh, I heard Avengers assemble. I heard him shouting assemble. Look, it was coming. We knew it was coming. I didn't.
No, I'm talking about the final scene.
Yeah, I know.
The very final scene with Zedmore.
Huh?
After the credits. Tell me you watched that far.
After the credits.
Hmm.
With
there's a secret bonus scene with Zedmore.
But there's three of them, isn't there? Two of them.
No, two scenes. Oh yeah, right at the end,
where Ernie Hudson brings the car in.
Buys the old.
Yeah.
So you get this whole.
Why is that an Avengers moment?
Because it's like he's going to put the crew back together. He's going to be like the Nick Fury. He's now really successful.
Businessman,
and he now owns all the stuff, and he bought that, and he's bought the car back, and he's going to do it up, and he's gonna be the fucking Nick Fury, and we're going to have a bunch of like new Ghostbusters.
Well, I think that'd be almost silly to move away from at least Phoebe as a Ghostbuster.
I think she'll be a part of it, but they'll probably
I think you kind of have to
bring in Melissa McCarthy, and we just have a kind of hybrid of
you can't that movie didn't happen.
So. The last thing you're talking about is obviously when we get the three of the Ghostbusters back.
I know you hate it. I didn't hate it.
It was coming. It was so telegraphed from a long way away. Yes. And because of the nostalgia in the movie, they had to show up. They absolutely had to show up.
But I think it shows the support of the movie from those three. I think it's a nice moment for those three because, I mean, behind the scenes.
But is it good? Is it good?
I didn't hate it. I thought it was nice. Is it
nice because it's nostalgic, or is
it's
it
nice because it's nostalgic and it's a sweet ending? That's about it.
But it doesn't. The movie suffers because we've. It doesn't. It's not good. It's not a good.
But as I said, the worst part of this movie is the ghostbusting.
The worst part of the movie is all of the movie.
No, the end 30 minutes is the worst part of the movie. Trying to bring in back Zool and bring back the hounds, that's the worst part of the movie because it feels so forced. Everything else, I feel a certain flow and, you start with a small ghost, like I said, and they chase that ghost through the town. They fail, or they catch the ghost, but they destroy the town doing it. That's a learnable moment there. But then you go and fight this giant apocalyptic world-ending one that four grown men struggled to tame and kill. It just that's where the movie falls off a cliff.
I got diabetes from the last scene.
How sweet it was! It was sweet. It was
having
it was
to have, but then you have Spengler in there as a ghost too, and all of the kind of family service and all the fan service shit that was in that last scene. It was just too much, and you're either setting up the Ghostbuster kids to ghostbust, or you're setting up the adults to come back and save the day. And they tried to do both, and it didn't work. And I still think there is a position where the Ghostbusters pass the mantle and you have that set up where they say, we are too old and we can't do this anymore. And so you have those guys either handing the baton to somebody new or you have like a rival Ghostbusters that have different tech, like that's not proprietary tech. Someone else can invent that shit and do that. They don't have to be it. I think there's another story in that.
There's a small line that says, how did you make this packs or this thing's so small. And he goes, oh, of course, you're a genius. Like, there's a small line.
You can't just wave away genius and say that there's not any geniuses that can do that.
But you are right. It wouldn't be a bad idea to have, like, someone who comes in thinking they know what they're doing and screwing the whole thing up. And then the original Ghostbusters have to come back with Phoebe to save the day. Well, maybe that's a better story.
I think you just have them handing the baton over to new Ghostbusters and training them, and I'm thinking about the interviews and all that stuff that could be humorous, facing them being completely flat broke. There's been no ghost for 30 years, so they've got nothing to do. The Ghostbusters are now kind of done, and so then it comes back and they're too old and they have to pass the mantle. I think that there's a better story in that than this kind of hokey family connection where she's just instantly genius because she's his granddaughter. And it's just, it's unearned. And it just, it didn't hit me in the spots that it wanted to. Like, it didn't hit the nostalgia. It made me roll my eyes.
The family stuff, not so much. It was when, like, you know, Ray and, you know, and that look over at him, like Venkman and stuff looking over at him, and That part was nice.
But that was designed to go, it was fine. So cynical. No, but I just didn't like it. I didn't like it. I didn't need to see him physically there. Like, I just didn't need to see that. I think they needed to come because ultimately, even though he'd gone completely off the rails, like, that's a story. There's a story in that that's actually deeper than what they gave us. Mm. And then coming together, even though he completely shit on them or something happened or whatever. And so he was building something and he could have told them and he didn't, you know, and for that, because that he kept himself completely isolated and they had a massive falling out and those guys turned up in the end because it's the right thing to do. It didn't need the winking kind of ghost at him. Like, it just didn't need to happen.
I think they just went all in. They, at this stage, they're just like, you know what, let's just throw every moment in under the sun at you and see what sticks.
And then the cynical bloody last bit with Sigourney Weaver and Bill Murray for no reason.
That really bugged me because it's like, and they showed all the cast and there's like, and Sigourney Weaver. I'm like, did I miss an appearance by Sigourney Weaver?
And then it cut to a completely pointless scene that did nothing and they thought it was funnier than it was. And the reality is Bill Murray's just not as funny as he used to be. No. Like, he's just,
Bill Murray's just not as funny. No.
He's just not there. He's not 80s Bill Murray anymore. Mm. And we've got good comedians, good solid comedians. Like, you know who I was thinking? I was sitting here watching this. I'm like, who would I throw the keys to make a movie? Who would I give? Which director would I give this to reboot this?
Yep.
And it's James Gunn.
Oh, of course it's James Gunn. If you didn't say James Gunn, I was going to yell at you because it has to be James Gunn.
It's James Gunn. And you throw James Gunn the keys and you say, make a darker, more adult Ghostbusters.
Yep.
And you give the keys to some new comedians and you give it, like, these guys came up through SNL. Like, these guys were, you know, and that's, honestly, that's what happened with Answer the Call. They gave it to SNL alumni like Melissa McCarthy, Kristen Wiig, those guys were SNL people. Kate McKinnon, they're all SNL characters. In fact, all four of them have been on SNL. They tried to kind of just keep that magic in the bottle. And I just don't think you can replace them. I just don't think you can do that.
I don't think you don't need men to come through and go.
I don't think it's men. I'm just saying good people. You have good a mixture people. Of men and women.
Have a mixture of men and women. I have a mixture of men and women and a bloody younger teenager. Do something different. Like, you've just gone, what's working at the moment? And it's Stranger Things. That's working at the moment. So let's do that.
It was really popular with the kids.
Let's do that.
It seems cynical. Like, it really does seem cynical that females didn't work, so we'll give it to kids and make the kids this. It's super, super cynical.
I will crap on about James Gunn and Peacemaker for the rest of my day because I love that show. I think it's it's probably my favorite show of this year. I love it. I love the tone. I love the humor. The Suicide Squad was a disaster. The Suicide Squad was really good.
Yeah, that and Guardians of the Galaxy are effectively Ghostbusters. They're coming together of a team that doesn't necessarily, like, he knows how to do teams coming together. And I just think that there is a movie in there somewhere in this universe that makes sense. But the one upshot from this movie that I really, really liked was that we saw some practical effects back in.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, we actually got some practical effects.
That effect where she's walking through the field and it's just crackly lightning through her silhouette. Mwah, chef kiss. But
We saw some animatronics. We saw some puppets. Yep. Some of the shots of the dogs were clearly puppets.
Yep.
And there was something about the practicality of some of these effects was awesome.
I think the simplest effect, and I think it's probably the best part, one of the best parts of the movie, is when she's having a silent conversation with her grandfather, or she's having a conversation with her grandfather, and he's using lights. Like, that's all he's doing. He's using a light, and it's so effective.
Yeah,
and it's with it. You barely have to say anything. She says, you know, and she just points a light at it, and it's so effective and perfect. I honestly think her finding all his stuff was one of the best parts of the movie.
Again, and when we see him, we didn't need that.
No,
we know he's there. You don't have to. There's not this nod to the fucking audience about it. Doesn't make sense to me. You know, and their thing is, like, we got one good look at a ghost, right? So we got Zool and a bunch of other stuff. And then we just got a bunch of lights.
Like the Slimer variant.
And we had, which was, it ate metal for some reason.
Ate everything, apparently.
And then we got one shot of the town with a miner or something sitting at the, which was clearly a nod to the first one.
The first one,
But we got no ghost. Like, there was extended ghost scenes. We saw the panic and the havoc of on the town in New York. Like, you see that. You see, I remember the courtroom scene with the ghosts that are on the electric chair flying around. Like, you actually see all those ghosts being released and what's happening to them. In this one, you get a couple of quick little shots and then it's all about Zool.
Yeah, which I hate. I hated everything about it.
And I just think that, again, it was like, what worked from the first movie? Zool worked. The dogs worked. Marshmallow worked.
Well, because, I mean, people understand that without actually telling them. You know, if you've seen Ghostbusters, you know what the dogs are doing. You know what's going to happen.
But it's repeating all the same beats too. Like, there is no mum, only Zool. Like, yeah, okay, that's kind of what she says in the first one. God,
talk about the mum. The mum, I think the only thing she said was, I hate this town, I hate my life, I have no rent, and my dad was a jerk. Like, that's the four things she says.
And then she meets Paul Rudd and she immediately becomes kind of smitten, and that's it. Yeah, that's her whole character.
I think the first, 10 sentences she says is something about her dad leaving her. Like, the daughter's genuinely interested. Like, what was his science? What kind of scientist was he? I don't know. The scientist of leaving us. And she's like, I'm asking a legitimate question here, Mum. Like, I'm actually.
She is a completely one note character.
Yeah.
You know, her whole character is, I hated her dad. Yeah. She hates her dad and she's pissed off and she's a kind of. She got no money, and the kids are kind of there. That's
good
it. That's
job, all you get. Man. Good job.
But that's all you get, right? Yeah. And then she meets Paul Rudd, and her whole job is to be kind of cutesy towards Paul Rudd. That's it. Whole character. Like, there's a movie here. Spengler left his family, left the other Ghostbusters, and went off and kind of lost his mind. Like, and that's kind of understandable given what they went through and the kind of science that he discovered that no one else had kind of been a party to. But you're telling me that no other scientists reverse engineered stuff and worked out what they were doing. I think there's either, they've been eradicated by all the pop-up fake Ghostbusters that popped up and that they were running as kind of the original Ghostbusters. And then that business model is just dead now because there's no ghosts. And so everyone's kind of either forgotten the technology or whatever. I think that's a movie in there somewhere. But I'm just
trying to think of it. I know there's a movie out there where they, you know, the old stories were an urban legend, like because it was so long ago, it's kind of become. I can't think of the movie off the top of my head, but I know there's a movie where they you know it was a fact. And then the remake was kind of like, well, no, it was an urban legend. We haven't seen that for a long time. There's because there's been no ghost sightings. There's been no technology, but that's in the writing. You know, that's the way it's been written for this movie, and there's different variants of the movie. It felt very Star Wars, you know, episode whatever it was, 9. Look at all the flashbacks. Look at all the nostalgia trips we can throw in there. But they need to develop the characters better.
It's that episode of South Park, the Remember Berries, you know, where it's just you just chomp on nostalgia, and it's clearly written by people who have a vested interest in this. Like, you know, Jason Reitman's dad directed the original. He was clearly, as a kid,
he was deeply invested in the original.
Yeah, like, he's deeply invested in that thing. Like, he clearly loves the property. But it feels like it's a movie made by market research. You know, what are the top 10 things you remember at the Ghostbusters? And they just had to make sure they hit all those points. And that's just not a movie. Ghostbusters was original. It was something that was purely unique and different and something we really hadn't seen before. It's why it resonated with the public. And if you're going to just keep going and rehashing the same story, the public deserves better than just, hey, remember that stuff. It was really good the time we did it.
Like, who are you making it for? Are you making it for a new audience to find Ghostbusters?
You are making it for us. Us. We're the audience. The people who saw it as kids and they're about. Like, you know, I see five-year-olds walking around with Ghostbuster logos on their shirts. Like, there are kids that their parents show them Ghostbusters. Like, you know, it's absolutely categorically the nostalgia. It is made for us and people slightly older than us. Like, when this came out, I wasn't even born yet.
No.
You know, was it 83? Is that
86.
Right?
Was it 86? 84?
I think it was 83, 84, something like that. It's on the tomb of bloody whatever. And then I think the next one was 87 or 88. So I was really young, you know, if at all. You know, but I remember seeing this as a kid and freaking loving it, you know.
Yeah, see,
and
I never had that. It was 86 I was. No, I was. Where am I? Well, literally,
I can't. 84, 86?
Well, I know I can see a couple of those two was 84.
So, look, I wasn't even born. I was 2 years off being born. Yep. 89, I was like three. So, but I have a massive nostalgia for this. But if I want to have nostalgia for this movie, I'll just go and watch the movie.
Yeah.
I'll go and watch Ghostbusters. I don't need this. Give me something different. Give me Ghostbusters for a new generation, for the kids that are coming up, so that they see something different that they haven't seen before. And in an age of, you know, heavy CGI movies that they can see practically anything, you've got to give them a unique story with characters that they can buy into and like. All those four characters, the original characters, have all got their different points that I really like. And the reason it works is because of the comedy.
Yeah. It wasn't, you know, this movie isn't funny.
And this movie's not funny. And I just think it needed to be punched up by a comedian. It needed to be punched
up
by someone.
But you've also got the, you know, the guy trying to claim his money and Bill Murray's a dick to him. You know, like that. Is it William Atherton?
Yes.
Yes, his character
as the EPA guy.
Yeah, it's hilarious. EPA, something like that. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he's definitely from the EPA.
Yeah,
you know,
you've got that the sheriff trying to be funny with, like, you know, who you're going to call. It's just like stuff like that where you just like, do you need to say that? Like,
you might as well wink to the audience every time. You might as well just break the fifth wall and go, huh? And you remember that from the first one? You remember?
I much prefer subtle details.
Which I think Answer the Call does better. I'd be fascinated if you watched Answer the Call. I'd be fascinated to see what you think now. There's enough time. I watched it when it was right in the peak of everyone just hated it, and I didn't think it was a good movie. I didn't like it.
See, my problem is that I never had the connection with Ghostbusters. I've seen it. I liked it. But I don't love it. And I just, one of those things that I never really loved the way you did. So when it came out and it was just like everyone hates it, I'm like, well, I don't need to see that. Why would I see something that I don't love and everyone's crapping on it?
And frankly, if it wasn't for this podcast, I probably wouldn't have bothered seeing it. And it's going to fall into a group of movies that I just have no interest in seeing. One of those is The Matrix. And we haven't done The Matrix yet, and we probably will get to it, but I will only watch that to talk about it on this podcast because I have zero interest in seeing it.
I have seen The Matrix, and I won't sway you any earlier.
But I just have zero interest in it because to me it's such a cynical grab of, we are out of ideas, so we will just keep doing the same stuff. We hear you guys like this, so here's this thing again.
But you have original content coming out. Like, you know, Stranger Things was original, it was brilliant, and it's still going strong. There's got to be original ideas out there. We can't just rely on, you know, was it popular in the 80s? Was it popular in the 90s?
But the Stranger Things is nostalgia. That is nostalgia done right. That makes you think of Spielberg. It makes you think of 80s. It makes you think of, you know.
But it's not
trying to be that. It's just set in that time and giving you a feeling of nostalgia with more being something new. That is nostalgia done right.
But it's not smacking you on the head with a baseball bat like this is.
I'm really struggling to think about a movie that they've brought back after such a long time and I've gone, that was brilliant, that made me feel like the first one did. I cannot think of a property that's come back. Like, I'm thinking, like, think about Jurassic Park. Like, I loved Jurassic Park, the first one.
Yeah.
I think the second one is pretty awful.
Yeah.
And then it gets bad from there.
Yeah.
Watching Jurassic World, they let hard into the nostalgia.
Well, the winner of the match was the original T-Rex.
But not just that. Like, it was set. They actually explored the ruins of Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
Like, they actually walked through it. They found the old merchandise. You got the stinger of the music.
Yeah.
You know, and I thought Jurassic World was fine. Definitely the second best Jurassic Park. But it's Jurassic Park and then fucking daylight and then T-Rex-sized shapes and then Jurassic World.
Yeah.
But it kind of it did enough in the nostalgia to not annoy me. This was worse. This was annoying nostalgia. This was really trying desperately to nudge the audience and be like, do you remember this stuff? Do you? Because now we've got it and we've got more of it. Seriously, I can't think of a reboot that I've got.
I'm literally Googling list of movie reboots.
That worked, that I like.
The best. Oh, here we go. Dread. There we go. There's one.
Dread just did something different. Like Dread, and the first one was terrible. So everyone, you can go up from there. Maybe Jumanji is the first one that jumps into mind.
Dawn of the Dead. Jumanji was good. Jumanji was fine.
Welcome to the Jungle. It's called Welcome to the Jungle, isn't it?
Yeah.
The first one?
Yeah.
It did something in the universe that was distinct enough from the first one. Like, it could have just remade it, whereas it happens again and they play it and more stuff comes out of the board game. But they went, what if they go into the game?
Yeah.
And that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah.
Now, I thought...
Well, like Alan Parrish did.
I thought that was fine.
It was fine. It wasn't...
It's really well loved. People really
like it. I enjoy it. I've watched it more than once. I enjoy it.
And it did something different. And it didn't bank on having like Robin Williams in it or whatever. Like, it just did its thing.
I mean, I guess that's the difference between a full reboot and continuing the franchise. Because like, you look at things like It. That's a reboot. And it worked well. But it's just repeating the same story.
Yeah, but they didn't remake Jumanji. I'm not talking about remakes now. And remakes are even in a different category altogether. I'm talking about where you stick your name on something and you continue the story. Because in Welcome to the Jungle, the first Jumanji happened.
Yes, yes.
So this is a continuation. And I'm talking about things like Ghostbusters, like Jurassic World, like this. You know, give me, and I'm not just talking about just a mindless sequel. I'm talking about where they really do restart it for a new generation.
Yeah.
You know, I think Jurassic World is probably the best one I can think of off the top of my head. And that's sad. Like, that's saying something.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of many, many more. But I didn't, I'll be honest, I didn't hate this movie. I've seen it twice now. I watched it originally and then I did it again for the podcast. I didn't hate my time with it. But I don't have the love for the original Ghostbusters like you do. And I feel like it's almost insulting to you the way they do things. And to me, it's like, oh, yeah, that's from the Ghostbusters. I'm pretty sure it's from Ghostbusters. And it didn't offend me the way it did. I don't hate the feeder character like you did.
The nostalgia pieces to me was like hearing that music again.
Yeah.
And listening to, you know, just seeing the Ecto-1. I knew that was going to be in there, but it's just nice to see
it. It's nice to see it.
You know, it's nice to see that. It's nice to, you know, the familiar link, if done correctly, could have been nice. Like,
yeah.
I just think that she was too young and she just didn't earn that strap. You know, was it nice to see the Ghostbusters together again? Not really.
It just shows how much Ernie Hudson hasn't aged.
Hasn't aged. Him and Paul Rudd are taking whatever
drugs they're on. Don't age. Whatever they're taking or their diet.
Compared to Murray, who looks so old.
Bill Murray looks like it's like three stages. There's like, you know, Dan Aykroyd looks old, but he's all right. Bill Murray looks sickly. And then you got Ernie Hudson, who looks, you know, better than I do.
And even just seeing Annie Potts and some of those, you know, minor characters, which would have been great if they could get Rick Moranis out of retirement. Like, that would have been so nice to see.
If they could get him, it almost would have made the movie. Cause
yeah, him and Sigourney Weaver together would have just been great. Like, but then you get cynical Sigourney Weaver at the end, tack on character for no reason. You know, I just... And then that stupid fucking Avengers bit at the end, which I'm calling Avengers because it really did feel like it was even after the credits.
It was building for a franchise.
I'm going to build the next generation of Ghostbusters.
Which is honestly where the movie should have started. Yeah, it should have started there.
And that's what I'm saying. If you had them selling it off or having to be picked up, people forgotten how to do it, or whatever else that comes on, or in that continuity that all the Ghostbusters but Ernie Hudson has died, and Ernie Hudson he doesn't know how the equipment works. He was just there. Like, he was a ringer. He walked into a job ad and said, I'll do it. And then he just started. Like, he is the least qualified person, and he kind of just learned on the job. You know, he doesn't understand how the tech works. So they have to find someone who understands the tech. Like, that's kind of a story, you know? I just don't like when it's just a cynical cash grab based on nostalgia alone. And all it had was trying to fan service me into liking the movie,
I do feel like they genuinely tried to give us a good experience. I don't feel like this was just a cash grab. I feel like there's enough love and respect for the originals.
The studios only made this for money. Made it because nostalgia sales.
But I don't think Jason Reitman's mindset would have been.
No, I think as a director, you're trying. But I think he wrote the script too. So I think his love of it is familiar. Like, and that's where I think a lot of the story comes from, is kind of his love for Ghostbusters and it being that kind of family connection to it. And his dad recently passed. So, you know, like, you can kind of see where that's heading. I just saw it as cynical and plain to my love of it.
After the four Harold part, and they showed you the original Ghostbusters, them driving through New York, all you wanted to do was watch the original Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back and watch it.
Because, I mean,
it's way better and funnier.
Well, look at it. I mean, you saw the Ecto-1 flying through New York City over the bridge with that music playing. I mean, is there a better theme song?
The theme song is so good. And having that at the end is absolutely right, to not try and hark it in the middle.
For sure, 100%.
Like, having it at the end where the movie's done and this is kind of the nostalgia part works fine. Yeah. I'm okay with that. That was absolutely the right placement for that song and that kind of footage.
Yes.
But it just made me want the original Ghostbusters again, and it just didn't give me anything new. I was so disappointed out of it because I thought all the right people are involved. Like, Dan Aykroyd's a producer, and, like, you know, clearly Jason Reitman is a very talented director in his own right, and a whole bunch of those people wanted this to work, and it just didn't. And I think the difference is that Answer the Call, the Paul Feig one, tried to be funny. I just don't think the jokes landed. I don't think it was my type of comedy. It was very pratfally and falling down and very Melissa McCarthy-esque. And I just don't find Melissa McCarthy
funny. No, I don't find her funny either.
In most circumstances. And it's nothing against her. I think she's supremely talented. She's just not my type of comedian.
Yeah.
Whereas I really like Kate McKinnon, but I think her thing was just turned up to 11. Like, Spengler was always really – he was so straight.
Yeah.
Like, Spengler was – the deadpan delivery of Spengler was so funny just in the way he did that. Kate McKinnon was, like, up at 12 and was annoying. And then Leslie Jones was just, like, Chris Rock on crack. Like, it just did my head in. Yeah. So there's bits I just didn't like. I didn't like the delivery, but I thought they tried at least to be funny. And this one didn't, and I missed it.
The general premise sounds better.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think Chris Hemsworth steals the show, even though it makes no sense. But he's really funny in it. And I think his scenes are great, if you can just put aside the part that he's literally dumber than a box of hair. Like, but at least I would challenge you to watch it all the way through and tell me whether you think it's a better movie.
I feel like they tried really hard, and I think that Dan Aykroyd and that liked the script enough to put their name to it, and... which is weird because I don't think it's a great story. I think, but there's parts I do like. I will say I think you're hating it much more than I did. So what grade are you giving it if it has to be a graded letter?
It's tough. It's not more than a C.
Yeah, I'm happy with the C+.
I think it's absolutely middle of the road in terms of competent filmmaking. It's all there. Shots are there.
You're not going to have a bad time watching this, I don't think. I don't think you're going to sit there and really hate it.
I disagree. I think I was bored for a lot of it.
It's no The Kingsman, because that was God awful.
There was too much winking to the camera, to my mind. But look, Paul Rudd's likable. He's likable in everything.
Yeah.
The actors are all fine. I didn't like the young
the
girl.
The action's fine. The
action's fine. It's competently shot. You know, there's the surprise.
I hated that podcast kid.
The podcast kid was annoying. But there was very little substance, you know, yeah. And I think that annoyed me to no end. That it was just so shallow,
and then, they try to add the heart at the end, and it's just
shallow. And again, what we know about Spengler is we don't know anything about him. Now we're being introduced. Oh, by the way, he had kids. Oh, and he was a really shitty father. And it's like, hold on, that's our boy. That's the guy that we love for two. And now you're just going to put it in there and say, no, he was a shit father, actually. And he's a shit grandfather too, and all the you know, and he was also a shit Ghostbuster because he left the rest of him. See ya, fuck you. Yeah. Like,
he's not there to defend himself.
No, that's terrible. Like, that's you know, it's just so disappointing. Like, he doesn't even get to win. Like, he's dead. You know, like, he comes back and it's like, oh, he's back, and it's like, yeah, but that doesn't forgive you for being a really shitty dad.
Yeah.
You know, like, I didn't like it. I really didn't like it. And the more I talk about it, I'm getting more and more annoyed by it. So and leave it at a C, but it's if we keep talking, it might go lower. If anyone can think of any movies that are good reboots or good continuations of a franchise, particularly after that length of time, and I do wonder why we're going back to the well on things like The Matrix and Ghostbusters so long down the track. If anyone can think of any good ones or bad, particularly bad ones that we've missed, masspodcasters@gmail.com. You can also talk to us on Instagram, Facebook, except all. That's it from us. Thank you so much for listening. And from Jake.
Who are you going to call?
If you didn't say that, I was going to leap through the screen. Because or there is no Jake, only Zool.
Only Zool.
Those are the two you get to have.
I mean, he's an impersonator. A fake. We interrupt this broadcast to bring you the following urgent announcement. You, yes you, put down that oversized bottle of Scrumpy and listen here. Do you like being entertained? Do you like television? Do you cringe at culturally insensitive, sexist, racist, problematic jokes in not quite old enough television shows? Do you like old-timey announcers who keep asking inane rhetorical questions, who go on and on so much that you just want to suck them right in the gusset? Do you like the letter H? Well, do we have the show for you? Built for people who love TV, where three rapscallions dissect two television shows, one old and one not so old, for a probable audience of 1-7. So dust off your flares, jump off your chamber pot, and a third old-timey product joke, it's time for Hardly TV History!